This from the Old Testament, among the most human of stories. And the Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre, and he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men stood in front of him. They said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "She's in the tent." The Lord said, "I will surely return to you in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I've grown old, and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old?' Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you in the spring, and Sarah shall have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh." For she was afraid. The Lord said, "No, you did laugh." As well she might. Well, I thought of this story of all places this last week. I was at the grocery store picking up like six things, and you know how that goes. And the place was kind of busy, and for reasons that escaped me but that seemed important at the time, I was in kind of a hurry. So I got my six things, and you know the double barrel express line, and you find yourself, well, which one should I get in? Which one's going to be quicker? And you do this little assessment of who all's ahead of you and what they're about. Well, there were two people in each of the express lines, and the people that were right at the checker were both about evenly soon finished. And the people immediately behind were the ones I was concerned about. And in one lane was this, well, it was a gentleman of some advanced years, let's put it that way, which is in and of itself not much, but he was also seemingly just struggling with life. He had a walker, and he had a basket, and he had all just manners of things made him appear to me like, this was going to take forever if I get in that line. And the person in the next line was a 20-something that was texting about something or other, and I thought, this is a millennium kind of girl. I picked this line. Great. So the people leave simultaneously, and then it's the elderly gentleman and the 20-something. The starting bell goes off, and they're about the same. And all of her stuff gets checked, and I hear the checker say to the girl, "These pork chops are buy one, get one free. Do you want another pack?" And she goes, "What?" She got that asked twice because of the texting. "They're buy one, get one free. You want it?" "Well, yeah, I think I do." "Well, you just go to the back and get you one." And by this time, the guy who I knew would be writing a check, because they all do, but he had the check all filled out. The checker put in the number. He had his ID ready to go, and zip, bang, zoom. He's out the door, and I'm still waiting for a little Muffy to get the pork chops. Oh. So I questioned the assumption that youth is required, as did Sarah and Abraham when the word of the Lord said, "Guess what? You're going to have a baby, and I'll make it happen." And she's laughing herself hysterically, because that just can't be. Well, this whole thing led me to a sequence of ideas about what it means to assume things and what we might gain from time to time by questioning some assumptions, particular assumptions. I thought of some specific examples that will take us somewhat afield from Abraham and Sarah, but we'll get back to there at the end. I think it's useful from time to time to question assumptions, but specifically and especially these days, to question these three assumptions. The first being, question the assumption that somebody is out to get you. Now, maybe you know people like this. Maybe you know people that just sort of live inside their own heads, waking up each morning asking immediately, "Who's going to get me today? Who do I have to watch out for?" And they live their lives so defensively and angrily and pathologically. It's called paranoia. And yet, that sort of individual pathological paranoia can catch on when we all come to believe, or when we are all seemingly credibly taught, that there are groups that are out to get us, and we have to protect ourselves, and we have to do this, that, or the other thing to prevent horrible things from happening from those people. And it's seductive to have a scapegoat for all our problems. And it it is not all that difficult to engage in the kind of groupthink that has us acting as though it's true. And of course, it's that mindset, that collective mindset, and even the particulars of scapegoats that made it difficult for Jackie Robinson to play baseball or for Albert Einstein to go to school. Question the assumption that they're out to get you. Now, what's interesting is that all assumptions have some nugget of truth. And in point of fact, something or somebody will get us one day. And there's a very small chance that that might be in some form of violent attack by some member of a group of some sort. But the odds are far higher that we might suddenly die violently at 19th and Avenue Q in a car. You know, it's an assessment of relative risk. And if we can sort of delude ourselves into thinking, if we can protect ourselves from these horrible things that other people might do, we're safe from the other things and we're not. And there are so many more important ways to at least be aware of the real danger instead of being seduced by a danger someone else creates in our minds. There are things that we can do with regard to nutrition and exercise, among other things, to weigh the relative risk of understanding how our lives might or might not end today. But even the understanding that it might, I think, makes the day more precious. And if we live our lives assuming somebody will get us, all we do is project into the future of how to prevent it, and it robs us from living in the moment. That's a point to which I will return. Secondly, I think it's useful to question the assumption that we know what other people are thinking. Now, if the first assumption has to do with us collectively, the second assumption has to do with us in the company of people we care about very deeply. I know what you're thinking because I know you well enough. And sometimes, especially when there might be a little tension between someone you love and you, I wonder what they're thinking. I'll bet they're thinking that. And if I do this, they'll think that. And if they do that, I'll respond this way. And suddenly you're five stages down the road in your own head of what the next 2 hours will bring. And it's like a chess match, you know, if they move there, I'll move there, and then we'll do that, and then we'll do that. And if you do that, assuming you know what the other person is thinking, you both wind up checkmate. It's over. Because you don't know what other people are thinking just by looking at them. It reminds me, by way of analogy, of a conversation I overheard between two other scholars debating, of all things, the No Child Left Behind Act and the value of standardized testing. And one person was making the argument that we have to have these rigorous tests and have to engage them repeatedly, because if you don't test them, how do you know what the kids have learned? And the other guy said, how do you know what the kids have learned? Ask them. Don't ask them, do you know this, yes or no? Do you know this, yes or no? Sit down and look them in the eye and say, what did you learn? So also, when you think you know what somebody else is thinking and act as though you know that's true, checkmate, the alternative is to ask them. What are you thinking about? What do you need? How can I help? I know I hurt you, and I'm sorry. You can't know what somebody else is thinking until you ask, and once you ask and learn, you get out of checkmate, among other things, and you move forward. You're in the moment you're in instead of the moment you imagine. Question assumptions. People are out to get you. You can tell what somebody else is thinking. And thirdly, you need to be somebody else. You need to be somebody other than you. Well, you can't be somebody other than you. You cannot. You can only be who you are. I learned this the other night. We were at the James Taylor concert. What a wonderful event. And James Taylor's second song was a song by Buddy Holly called Every Day. He said, we don't sing this every day, but And he made that song his own. He didn't sing it like Buddy Holly. He sang it like James Taylor. And it was awesome. When you decide who you need to be, you're better off if you decide to be who you already are. And take what you've learned from somebody else and make it your own. Because you can only be the best Mike or Margie or Jerry that you can be. That's all you can be. So question the assumption that you have to be somebody else. This is what gets actors into trouble. You know, Meryl Streep and John Wayne play these characters. And they can't be those characters in real life. And for some who are in the acting profession, it drives them literally nuts to try to be somebody they aren't. So question the assumption that you have to be somebody different. You're the only you that God made. All of these assumptions, as you might have picked up, take us out of ourselves, take us out of the moment. And the moment is the only place where we can be. We can only be in this moment assessing relative risk and relative love with our life and our people. And we can only do that by being ourselves. And I think Sarah in the Bible story so elegantly stayed in the moment when she heard this unbelievably bizarre news that she was going to be a mother at some point soon. And she could have tried to project all that out. Instead, she said, shall I have pleasure? I don't know what was going through her head at that moment. Like maybe a wineskin full of the good stuff, freshly grilled goat, candlelight, let's make a baby. Shall I, etc. In the moment. And it brought a smile to her face, and she got caught laughing. And then she thought, oh, I shouldn't be laughing about this. No, you laughed. There's nothing that hooks us to the moment more than a bit of laughter or a smile. You ever done this to a kid that's sulking? And you know why they're sulking, and they're just being 12. And you go up and you go, don't you laugh. Don't you laugh now. And sometimes they can't help it. They just break into a smile. And it's the laughter, it's the smile, even the sort of rueful smile like me at the grocery store. You really are an idiot, you know that. And of course, I know that. And at the last, it was sort of funny to have been so easily duped by my own thinking. But it got me through the moment, it got me through the day. And that's the only thing that really helps, is even if only a rueful smile, a bit of laughter. And you know what the irony of this whole story is? This child born to Abraham and Sarah is named Isaac. And if you translate the word Isaac from the Hebrew, it means laughter. Question assumptions. Amen.